Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Insight podcast number 232. We're recording this on Thursday, the 31st of January, 2013. I'm Steve Litchfield. With me, two chaps from the site. We have Mr. Rafe Blandford.
Hello, everybody.
And we have Mr. David Gilson.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Rafe. And hello, everybody who's listening. It's good to be back.
Yeah, about 2 weeks since our last podcast here, but I think that'll be roughly the right schedule for certainly for the first half of 2013. We did see Rafe the comment across the blogosphere that Symbian is dead with this rather comical and one-liner Nokia's results saying, oh, by the way, the Nokia 808 was in fact the last Symbian device, which is something most of us have known for almost a year. But never mind, it's great to see all the Symbian nostalgia right across the world, wasn't it?
It was kind of fun seeing people recalling their favourite Symbian devices, things like the N95 obviously getting a big mention, but everyone seemed to have their favourite. But yes, it came as about as big a surprise as the sun rising each morning that the 808 was the last device. I mean, we've talked about it several times on the podcast, and you know, we've had people ask us, are there going to be another Symbian device? We said, well, no, there's a tiny possibility, but never really realistically. And actually, I had someone contact me and say, are there going to be any more Symbian devices from anyone else? And I guess this connects into, you know, is there the possibility of an open Symbian device? And honestly, the answer is, frankly, no. Although the kind of Symbian source code was released by the Symbian Foundation and theoretically Nokia could still release it, it wouldn't really help because you'd need a lot more than just kind of the operating system. Yeah. When you're building a smartphone, you have to bring it up on hardware, and that requires all sorts of device drivers and integration. So this kind of idea that Symbian could live as an open source project, or someone could hack it onto one of the modern smartphones, it really doesn't fly, unfortunately. As much as I think we'd all like to see it happen one way or another, I think these platforms kind of have a way of living on. And you know, there's things like WebOS, and that's obviously got its open source and version, but I don't really expect to see the same happen with Symbian. So yes, I guess it's officially the last device, which did generate all sort of rest in peace headlines, but maybe we'll chat a bit more about that and whether it is dead or how you define dead at the end of the podcast, Steve.
I'd love to, because as you can imagine, I'm fairly passionately of the view that Symbian is in fact alive by my definition, and we'll come back to that later in the podcast. I should just mention, you're talking about is there a possibility of an open source Symbian specialist device. I think the most interesting thing going forward, apart from the last final few updates for the Nokia official devices and firmwares, will be the custom firmware scene, which seems still to be flourishing. And I actually saw a custom firmware for the Nokia 808 called Mohican come out this week. And of course, that's something I shall be investigating later this year. So never give up on those enthusiasts coding away in their bedrooms, assembling ROMs and firmwares and seeing what goes well with what. So it's all good stuff.
Indeed. I mean, we should probably point out that the custom firmware is very different to, you know, a new device altogether or completely rewritten software, because what these custom firmwares tend to be is combining other bits together and then sort of putting them on the ROM of the device, kind of the read-only memory where all the software where lives, it's or the Z drive as it is on the Symbian platform, rather than sort of being on the C drive. And so people will sometimes include third-party applications or various other bits of updates that Nokia have provided and other things. And so I would describe the custom firmwares more as remixing rather than creating from scratch, but obviously there's a fair amount of skill involved. And yes, I know we're going to cover that for some of the more recent devices as well over the next few months.
Yeah, well, let's just cover that quickly, because I did notice that Symbian updates are still arriving. So Symbian is not dead. No. Extra Twitter and Flickr sharing options have arrived for the Nokia 808 and indeed for some people's 701s and presumably 700s as well, rolling one of these typical rolling out updates. Basically, when the 808 firmware was first launched and Bell Feature Pack 2, you had the option to share images from Gallery via Facebook, and then once you'd done that, the Facebook icon would install itself in your toolbar for quick sharing thereafter. But you couldn't do the same for Twitter, and you couldn't do the same for Flickr unless you were in America, because there were some firmwares over there that got that particular feature. Now Nokia are basically making things more consistent, and as updates rolling out, certainly to my 808, I had it and did the screenshots, image share to Twitter and image share update including Flickr, and basically you can now share from the Gallery straight to Twitter, straight to Flickr, and those icons then go center in your Gallery toolbar. So you then do quick sharing to Twitter, quick sharing to Flickr thereafter. So really good to see these updates, and hopefully it'll roll out across all the Bell Feature Pack devices. And who knows, I suspect there may even be some other minor updates and fixes coming to the Bell Refresh devices too. So plenty still to look forward to, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's entirely possible to see some updates, and it's kind of nice to see this sharing of images become, you know, a bit more consistent. And honestly, you know, by the time you're doing Facebook and Twitter, you're covering the major social networks. I guess there's no Google Plus, which is sort of almost, I think, it got to the point where it's coming in number three or four social network, depending what the numbers you look at and how you count users. And Flickr's a nice extra, and personally I'm pleased to see that because it's often how I upload images when I'm live at events. So I've got Mobile World Congress coming up, and I'm going to be taking the 808 along as kind of my, you know, portable, almost happy snap camera, and then being able to share some images instantly. And obviously going to have that Flickr upload option on the toolbar is going to make things a lot easier for me.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing I did want to mention, Ray, before we go too far into the podcast, we did have a couple of outages on the site caused by, I think, malicious intent from elsewhere on the internet. But I wanted to reassure people not to panic if they see that ever happening again, because we do monitor the site, don't we? And within a few hours, you'll be on it and the site will be back to normal.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Unfortunately, it's part and parcel of the websites, and we do our very best to make it secure, but sometimes things do happen. We have put some extra measures in place, so hopefully it shouldn't reoccur. But you can get hold of us on Twitter and various other options. We do keep a close eye on the sites ourselves, maybe not quite 24/7, but there is monitoring going on, and I do start getting text messages and emails telling me when something's not working. Or sometimes it's not always possible to spot these through automated messages. So it is now been fixed, and I can only apologise to anyone who was redirected to a malicious site or came across a problem while they were using the site. It's rather embarrassing, in all honesty, because we try and avoid these sort of things. So I hope anyone who did come across that can sort of maybe forget about it, or just forgive us for having that particular lapse. I don't think it was anyone with a particular malicious intent against Symbian users or anything like that. I'd love to believe some of the conspiracy theories out there, but I think the timing was probably just a bit coincidental.
There we go. I shall stick to my conspiracy theory. Now, this is an interesting one. Google, we reported this, have pulled the option, in theory, from the end of January this year, i.e. today. In theory, you couldn't then do a new active sync setup. So on your Symbian device, you couldn't then say, OK, I'm setting up a Gmail and a Google Contacts, a Google Calendar, to Google servers for active sync. That function, in theory, was supposed to stop today. In practice, we've had a news story in the last 24 hours which says that due to pressure from Microsoft, presumably, and various negotiations behind the scenes, Google have now extended that deadline of when they're cutting off the active sync setup support until the end of July. Now, Rafe, obviously for Windows Phone users, this is set in stone. They've said this is what's going to happen. You've got 6 more months, and then you've got to switch over to the new protocols. What happens for Symbian users? I presume that Symbian users can also benefit from this, and Active Sync will carry on working for setting up new Symbian devices for the next 6 months as well.
Well, I'd like to think so, but the bad news is I think Google will be making a distinction between the two. It can tell, obviously, what the device is that's connecting, and so we'll probably look at that and reject it, if you like. What Google actually said in their statement is they would be withdrawing the kind of Exchange Active Sync support over the coming months. So it may well be that it will work for a little bit longer when you're setting up a new device. And as we've said before, if you already set up, you won't see any changes. It's really only applies to new devices, which I imagine in the Symbian world are going to be relatively few and far between over the next period. If you look at this from some of the other devices being affected by this, one of the big ones is actually Windows 8 itself, particularly the sort of built-in contacts calendar and mail application. And from what Microsoft has said, they aren't getting that same extension for the kind of the desktop platform. It only applies to Windows Phone, the mobile platform. So I suspect much the same will apply to Symbian. So if you're going to set it up, do so in the next few days, because I think it is probably now just a matter of a few weeks or maybe a month or so before it gets withdrawn. You know, whenever a company is withdrawing a service like this, it doesn't always happen with a magic flick of a switch. You know, they tend to say this is a date after which we'll no longer guarantee that it will work, and then obviously gradually switch things off, change things over. I think that's the situation. If we hear any differently, we will of course let people know on the podcast. I guess one of the things we can do is just remind people what are their alternative options, and I'm going to get David to say something because he is sitting in on this podcast, and you've got one particular option that you have used in the past, David, that can sort of let people keep on using their Google services, haven't you?
Yes, and that's the name that I think a lot of listeners may find familiar, which is NewAversync. NewAversync provide a mail for exchange interface to Google, but they themselves don't connect to Google through mail for exchange. They use Google's own APIs, probably in the same way that Android devices do. So they actually provide a much better service. They do provide a free service, although you don't get things like push mail unless you actually pay for the service. But it's actually not very expensive. I can't remember the price off the top of my head, but it's very inexpensive. And if you rely on this sort of thing, it is really well worth it. And it's actually better than using Google's own mail for exchange, because with the fact that it interfaces with Google's own APIs, it brings in Google tasks. So you get email, contacts, calendar, and tasks. And you get other things like remote wiping of your device and backups. It's a much better class experience than what Google actually provides. So you look at my review of NewAversync, which I did a few years ago, on allaboutsymbian.com.
Yeah, just to give people the detail on the pricing, it's actually $30 a year or $2.50 a month, which I think is pretty reasonable if, you know, that added push element is important to you. The other option that you can do is actually switch over your kind of PIM services to a different web provider. Now, I think this is largely going to depend on, you know, what your usage is like. You know, do you spend a lot of time entering contacts and calendar entries actually in the web version of these services, or do you do it all on the phone and have the sync as kind of a backup, which is personally how I've always used them. You can, of course, keep using Gmail through IMAP because that will still work just fine. And in theory, it will get pushed to you, although in practice, we found it perhaps not as reliable as it should be. So one option you can do is actually switch over to Microsoft's own services. This is a combination of Outlook.com and the sort of various in transition live services. They've actually already switched over the contacts, and calendar is due to switch over at some point. But if you go to outlook.com and set up a Microsoft account there, that will give you email, calendar, and contacts, which is all compatible with Exchange Active Sync. And the good news is it's fairly easy to import things from the Google services if you want to do so. I think the big sort of problem there is obviously switching your email address, but even there you can actually make Outlook behave as if it's sending from your Gmail address, so you don't even have to necessarily change the address, and there's various imports in there. We have written up on the site when we were first talking about Exchange Active Sync, and there's actually a lot of other people talking about their experience. I haven't actually gone through it myself. I'm sort of quite tempted to do so, and we may well write that up from our own point of view on the site in due course.
You will have problems, Rafe, with it syncing your tasks down from NewAversync. Of course, your own to-do list is so legendary long, I think the 5 terabyte limit might actually be a problem.
Yes, which is why I can't use NewAversync.
The other thing I was just going to add as well is that some people may use the gmail.com address as their primary address, so it's saying, well, try using Outlook.com might not be very helpful, but you can, of course, if you do really fancy going over to outlook.com, you could also set up a filter on your Gmail to catch anything that's coming in and forward it onto your outlook.com address, and then, as Rafe said, set it up so it seems if you're sending from Gmail when you send from Outlook.
Yeah, so in effect what that means is your email address doesn't change, it's just the kind of the webmail client you use. Now I do appreciate, before I get loads of screaming comments, there's actually a lot of things in Gmail that you don't get in outlook.com, particularly around labels and some of the more advanced features. And, you know, personally, I do like Gmail. I'm used to it. I've been using it for a long time, which is why I'm going to stick with it for the time being. And I suspect I may find other ways to get my contacts and calendar across, and it may well be NewAversync. But I've got it set up on my existing device, and so I'm afraid I'm being a bit ostrich in the sand, head in my sand. Got that completely wrong. A bit like an ostrich with his head in the sand at the moment. But there are options out there. And I can't help but feel it's a little bit unfortunate Google couldn't have gone, oh, we'll just keep Exchange Active Sync going for legacy devices, but never mind.
Yeah, yeah. Moving on, we do have a very useful update for me this particular. I've had all sorts of problems in the past, as people will know, regular listeners, with my Nokia E7 and Wi-Fi, and it just makes the device completely unusable. Luckily, Nokia had produced what they call a beta WLAN software update, a Wi-Fi update, which they released initially for Bell Feature Pack 2 devices. They've now, after heavy pressure from me and a million letters sent into their senators, backported it to Bell Refresh. So you can now, if you go through the link in our story, download this beta WLAN software update for the N87C7, C601, E6, X7, and the Oro, as long as they have been updated to Bell Refresh. Basically, it aims at improving connectivity to older routers, which I guess mine was. And certainly on my E7, I can now download podcasts willy-nilly without any problems whatsoever. So thoroughly recommended if you've been having problems. I guess the old adage, Rafe, is if you're not having a problem with Wi-Fi on your smartphone, then don't install it. But if you are, then go for it, because I thoroughly recommend it.
Yeah, and I can't remember how long Steve has been complaining about this router to me. And I've sort of mildly suggested maybe he'd like to get a new router, but it seems that will no longer be necessary.
Absolutely, absolutely. Moving on with some applications. This is just of note, really. SPB TV, and maybe David can contribute on this. I've been a bit of a fan of theirs. Kind of wishing they had a few more channels of any use in their system. But you can't knock a completely free, free-to-air internet TV system. So SPB TV has now hit the big version 3.0. David, can you just tell listeners what's new?
Well, the official changelog for SPB TV is short, but rather substantial still. It's they now support high-quality streams, and it can adapt to varying bandwidth environments. There's a channel store with categories and search, so it's much easier to find what you want. It integrates better with Nokia Bell user interface, and it's also added support for new hardware decoders in presumably newer devices. And there's been the usual performance and bug fixes included too.
Yeah, I did try this out, David, and I have to say some of the channels seem to be very low resolution and others seem to be much higher, so I presume they're gradually upgrading their feeds, and in time most of the channels will be high resolution.
I would hope so, though it depends what's coming from the source. I think they'll be including high bitrate streams where available. That should be the caveat they should have put on.
Yeah. I think that's right. I mean, SPB TV effectively acts as an aggregator for a whole bunch of free-to-air channels that are out there and broadcasting over the internet. Some of the magic it does on its servers does involve obviously encoding them correctly for mobile. It's kind of optimizing it in both bandwidth and also power consumption terms. And that's also always kind of been the magic source of SPTV. And actually in a couple of countries, it's shipped by operators as kind of an extra service with the phone, you know, kind of an added offering, I guess, to make it more attractive to be with that particular operator. But they've always also made it available as a free download, which I think is, you know, a nice strategy to follow. But obviously they are dependent on the source material. They're obviously not producing all this TV themselves, but you do get high resolution channels, you know, stuff like the NASA TV, which I always enjoy watching, especially if there's a big launch going on. That's obviously HD available, but some of them are just in, you know, very low streaming rates or bit rates, as David says.
Yeah. Okay. Another big application that's had a big update, perhaps with slightly less definite change log, Opera Mini. This is the native version of Opera Mini. You may remember years back it launched as a Java application, still very useful with Java. About 2 or 3 years ago, it switched to being a native Symbian app, and the performance, you know, tripled or quadrupled overnight. The latest version is 7.10. It's quoted as being UI tweaks and optimizations and better download management. But for my money, it's faster, slicker, smoother, and even easier to recommend. Probably my first or second install on and every new Symbian smartphone is to put a copy of Opera Mini, because when the bandwidth is short, it's the only browser that gets through it. It can reduce the full Verge website. The Verge's full website is something like 7 or 8 megabytes of images and resources and stuff, and it can download all of that to its proxy server and render it and stream it down in compressed form in about 12 seconds or something ridiculous. So highly recommended. Go and grab it now, m.opera.com in your Symbian web browser, and you can just grab it directly. It will appear in the Nokia store, but that's usually a week or two later, so always best to go direct, I think.
And I think it's an amazing app. I was having, shall we say, a strong discussion with someone the other day that was, you know, very against these proxy browsers. And what we mean by proxy browsers, like Opera Mini, there's basically a server in the middle that's doing the compression job. And there are several of these about UC browsers, another good example. Nokia actually have Nokia Express on their Asha devices and recently introduced it to Windows Phone as well. And they were sort of saying, it's no longer the proper web experience. And I was going, well, yes, there is a trade-off in this. And quite often you will see the odd rendering artifact I'll describe it as. You know, something doesn't come across quite as it should. But for the most part, you get the information that you want. And of course, you do have the option of switching to another browser if you're doing something specific. Because the place where you do tend to have problems is using web apps. But I find a lot of the stuff I'm doing on mobile phones is around relatively simple mobile sites, which it renders very well and very speedily. But more particularly, it's kind of some of the bigger sites that don't always have good mobile versions or don't recognize the Symbian device as a mobile device. And that's bad form, chaps. You shouldn't be doing that. But that's what the reality is. And that's where it does particularly well, because as Steve says, you know, reducing a big site like The Verge, and there are plenty more out there. We shouldn't, you know, just focus on that, to 12 seconds. I find most sites will load in a handful of seconds, and it really makes that kind of web browsing experience on the Symbian devices really quite pleasant when it comes to actually getting information that you want to read. There are caveats with it, I won't pretend otherwise, but the combination of that time saving, but also the data saving, can be quite significant. Yeah. And I found this particularly when I'm traveling abroad, which is quite often when I'm using a Symbian device, partly because it is sort of a bit more frugal on the data front. I still want to do the odd bit of browsing, and I really appreciate the cut down in data then, in particular, not just being in a rural location, which I am, don't have 3G. A lot of the time, you know, using the mobile web on a 2G connection, it's how everything started. And I still say that's kind of the basic level that everyone should, you know, have their services working on. But a lot of even mobile optimized sites aren't particularly friendly to use on 2G unless you're using one of these proxy browsers.
Yeah, yeah. In practice, I tested a load of sites for a recent browser feature on the site, and I was looking at loading times, but I also, for a couple of the sites, logged the exact number of kilobytes or megabytes transferred. And I was getting over 10 times compression in terms of the actual number of bytes transferred. So, for example, where a site would be a megabyte of images, resources, and JavaScript in Symbian Web, it would be 100 kilobytes in Opera Mini. And that's a huge data saving if you scale that up over your weekly browsing habits. So, yeah, highly recommended. That's Opera Mini 7.1.
Yeah, I mean, just talking about your testing, actually, Steve, I mean, you did, I think, five sites or so, a mix of different ones. And through Symbian Web, which would be very similar to what you get in a desktop browser, it was 2.1 megabytes. And in Opera Mini, it was 100 kilobytes, you know, so a 20-time saving. Even in Opera Mobile, with the kind of the turbo technology, which is kind of using quasi-proxy technology to make some saving, it was 400 kilobytes, you know, so still a saving of five times over there. UC Browser wasn't as efficient as Opera Mini, but sort of a similar saving. And that obviously also translates into time as well. It's not just about, you know, saving data. Just looking at your results, for example, you were seeing, you know, over a 2-minute download for The Verge, and then you were seeing The New York Times 36 seconds. And that was, you know, going down to a quarter of the time. And that obviously saving is even more apparent when you're on a slow connection. I mean, you were testing, I think, for the most part on 3G on Wi-Fi.
I was on Wi-Fi, yeah.
If you go down to 2G, obviously any of those data savings, just because of the size of the pipe, the savings in time terms increase substantially. So it's interesting. I see a lot of people saying, well, why use a proxy browser? Actually, I would like to see it used more on smartphones in general. And certainly I would welcome seeing Opera Mini on Windows Phone. It's one of the applications I actually really miss. I mean, I am using Nokia Express, which is kind of a substitute for it, but it's not as efficient and hasn't been developed over so many years. So it's not, I wouldn't say the usability or the user experience isn't quite so good. So even on, you know, a high-end smartphone, there are times when you're on, you know, a place where you haven't got a good data connection. There's, you know, it's one of these ways where actually Symbian users are spoilt for choice more so than they are on other platforms.
Yeah, even though it may mean that most of us have four browsers installed for various different purposes, which is not a problem because they're not all running at the same time. Now, here's a topic close to my heart. We mentioned it at the top of the podcast. Symbian RIP. Symbian's dead, or as I'd argue, it's not dead. And this is my reasoning, Rafe, just, and Dave, maybe you can both contribute here. But first of all, I reckon, even on a conservative estimate, there are at least 100 million active Symbian users out there. That's more than the total number of BlackBerry users, for goodness sake. 100 million people. And while those 100 million are still using their Symbian devices actively, then how on earth can the platform or OS be dead? We're also seeing new applications still coming onto the Nokia store faster than we can review them. We're seeing firmware updates still coming. You saw the update with that Twitter and Flickr. It's not a full firmware update, but it's a software update, and we are expecting at least one more 8.0.8 full firmware patch at some point in 2013. Existing applications still being actively updated on the Nokia store. Official support forums at Nokia, discussions.nokia.com, for example, they'll be live for at least another 3 years in terms of their Symbian coverage. Nokia spare parts, repair services, all available for another 3 years or so to 2016. Plus, of course, all about Symbian, we indeed will be here to some degree over the next 2-3 years, whenever. As long as people are still using Symbian and people producing applications, we'll be here providing some reviews, tips, links, and occasionally news of actual updates. That was that 7 reasons, Rafe, why Symbian isn't dead. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think, as I said at the top of the show, it's really about the way you define these things. And I think it's fair enough to say that the platform is dead from the point of view. It's not being developed in a serious way anymore. We aren't going to see a big new update. There aren't going to be new devices. And from this point, you know, it's kind of the zombie platform. But I think using emotive language like it's dead or the dead platform is rather a disservice to the people that are still using it, because for them it's still very much alive. You know, walking into a shop, there are still places where Symbian devices are being sold, particularly out in Asia, and I know there's some people still wanting to pick up an 8.0.8, so that doesn't strike me as very dead yet. And, you know, it's the same that applies to all these other platforms that kind of have disappeared in terms of active sales and development over the years. You know, WebOS and Palm being good recent examples, but actually something like MIMO and now in reality MeeGo as well, they've all sort of disappeared but have big enthusiast communities behind them. Another good example is Cyan. Now, for those that don't know, Steve was basically the Mr. Big in the Cyan world in terms of distributing software and websites about the platform back in the day. And of course, there aren't that many Cyan users, and I think they sold a couple of million units over the course of various models. But Steve was telling me only the other day there's still people who occasionally contact him for help and support, or want to get hold of a particular bit of software or sometimes an accessory. So these things go on a lot longer than they imagine. And I think one of the important distinctions with Symbian is that, yes, it's become, if you like, a zombie platform or an orphan platform, but it actually has an installed base far bigger than any other kind of abandoned platform that I can think of. You know, if you track all the sales over the various years, I think Symbian's now at about 600 million, maybe even a bit more than that, units. And you know, that's an enormous number. And Steve is estimating 100 million users. I actually think that's probably a bit on the low side, because 100 million is essentially what Nokia have sold in terms of Symbian devices since sort of March 2011. Now, if you sort of think about that, that's, we're coming up on 2 years now. The average time that people own a phone is between 22 and 28 months, depending on which study you read. But there are people who hold on to devices a lot longer than that, and it doesn't always consider the second-hand market. So I'd suggest, you know, it might actually be up towards 120, 150 million possibly, and there'll be an awful lot of people that have Symbian as a second device. I mean, in fact, I probably qualify in that department myself. Windows Phone is now my primary device. I can't pretend otherwise, but I still regularly use a Symbian device, and I'll certainly keep one in a drawer. And there are times when actually I deliberately choose to use one. Now, I'm sure most people, you know, they keep their old phone rather than chuck it away. We are encouraged to recycle it or give it away or sometimes make money with it. But I know a lot of people keep phones in, you know, a desk drawer or something like that. And so there will be people who still have a Symbian device. So I'm not sure we can necessarily count them as live or active users. But yes, I'd agree with Steve. I may not be quite so passionate about the Symbian lives argument, but it strikes me as rather undefined message in saying that it's dead. And you need to explain the context. And for all the reasons that you stated in terms of support and people actively using it in very significant numbers, I think saying, you know, rest in peace is a bit misleading. At the same time, I think, you know, Symbian enthusiasts, including me, need to sort of be realistic and go, yes, you know, it is, you know, fading away now. And zombie is an unkind way to put it. Maybe a better way to put it, yes, as I say, is it's fading away like a dimmer switch. It's not ever going to shine as bright as it once did, but it's going to take a long time for the light to disappear. And moreover, I suspect actually the influence of Symbian and what it did to smartphones, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it defined the very first smartphones and it gave birth to the devices that are going to be used for years to come, and its influence will continue to be felt. And while many people talk about the iPhone as the sort of birth of the smartphone, for me, it will always be Symbian. And I think you can make a very, very strong argument for that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Symbian was a smartphone before the iPhone was a smartphone, and I don't really care how anyone defines a smartphone. yes, I also agree that when you're using emotive language, context just gets lost, and you end up having these emotionally charged comments that are good for headlines. And let's face it, that all of this reaction in the tech world is at the heart of making headlines. So yes, when you say Symbian is a dead platform, but it's got 600 million or 120 million users, it's got a lot of people. They'd beat you in a fight.
I think about emotive headlines. I mean, Symbian RIP or Symbian is dead is very emotive, but then so was my riposte. Symbian OS lives. So I was exclamation marks. So
is it perhaps fair to say, Steve, though, that you're kind of on the opposite side of the spectrum to the people saying, rest in peace, Symbian, and perhaps there's a middle ground somewhere in between? I mean, could you accept that perhaps Symbian is fading away gracefully?
Yeah. Well, I'm not blind. I'd say at the end of my piece, look, I produce the phone show and I'm playing with all the other platforms. I'm constantly, every day, every single night, I lie awake in bed agonizing. Now, what device should I be using tomorrow? Which is the best device for me? Maybe that's just me being ultra geeky, but I actively put my SIM card in all these other phones. I load up my data. I load up my applications. I try and use them for a day. I try and use them for a week. And in each case, I always find a reason to come back to Symbian and the Nokia 808 in this particular case. So it's not me being totally head in the sand like your proverbial ostrich, Rafe. I'm actively trying to look elsewhere and look into the future. But for me, that tipping point hasn't yet been reached. And I'm at the moment still coming back to Symbian.
Yeah, I should let the listeners in on a secret, though. I did have a conversation with Steve the other day where he was clearly very distraught when he said, I think this Windows Phone stuff is getting quite close to Symbian. I'm not quite at the switchover point. And I said, yes, I'm afraid I've already switched over to the dark side as far as Symbian users are concerned. But I would also sort of emphasize, you know, we had a lot of comments on the site with this story. Understandably, people get, you know, feel strongly about it. And I think actually respect the fact that everyone uses the devices in a different way. And nothing irritates me more than people saying, why on earth would you still use a Symbian device? Because I think there's plenty of reasons why people might choose to do so. You know, quite apart from maybe not having a choice of devices drawn, we're all quite fortunate in that we do have multiple devices to choose from. But even then, I mean, we're all saying, as people who both own Windows Phone, Android and iOS devices, that we find reasons to continue using the Symbian devices. And I would imagine there's plenty more people out there like that.
Yeah, there's hundreds of millions of people out there like that. But, I mean, to put some context into why I think a lot of people are saying RIP Symbian and Symbian instead is, let's just strike an analogy. We're in the Stargate world, okay? And when you can go through the Stargate and come back home, you're alive, you're fine. Now, if you go through the Stargate and then your Stargate gets blown up, you are cut off, but you're not dead. You still got some supplies to live on. But without connection back to Earth, sooner or later, you will die out because you only have finite resources with you. And this is the situation that Symbian's in. It has got a finite support lifetime with it. There is a finite number of, while it's a huge number, there is a finite number of devices out there, and Nokia are not making any more. And at the same time, devices are getting old, people are replacing them, probably not with other Symbian devices. So it is dwindling. And also the journalists out there who are writing about smartphone platforms, they do live at the cutting edge of consumer tech. And in their eyes, Symbian isn't developing anymore because it's not really, it's being maintained. And also, once you have tried the other platforms in comparison to Symbian, you do start to see where it was kind of coming apart at the edges and creaking under its own weight a little bit with the like Byzantine menu structures and everything. Although there are absolutely still reasons to come back to Symbian, especially if you have an N8. I mean, my N8, I basically use it in the same way that someone would use a Galaxy camera. It's an internet-connected camera, and a very good one at that. And there's also some mini devices have still got the absolutely best battery life. So it's something that you'd want to put in your pocket for a few days.
Well, I can't say I ever thought we'd be able to mention Stargate on an All About Symbian podcast. And I guess it's fair to say that Symbian has ascended now, or is in the process of doing so. So long may it live on, and it will watch over the rest of the smartphone world, as I say, for years to come. But actually, the point that David was making there about other smartphones having stuff going for them is absolutely right. And I think in time, everyone, of course, will switch over to a new device. One of the things I've always said about Symbian is I feel the problems that it had really reflected the fact that, you know, smartphones go in life cycles and a platform has appeared and you can choose your length between sort of 6 and 10 years. I tend to think the industry moves in cycles of about 6 to 8 years, and a platform is effectively designed to be optimal for that period. And then because things are so fast moving, you know, the way people expect to use devices, the way they expect to use mobile devices changes. And, you know, if you like, the set of use cases, the way people use the devices, everything that's built around the device that sort of fundamentally defines its architecture and its way of doing things changes. And Symbian was, you know, built in an era where actually it was phone first and smart second. And that kind of legacy is really very much still apparent today. Where if you look at some of the other platforms, I think iOS was kind of the first one to do this, and then Android followed very much in its wake. It was far more about smart and maybe less about phone. And I think a lot of people would still say a Symbian device makes a superior phone. I mean, partly that's down to the hardware, but there are other reasons for that as well, particularly if you're doing voice over IP integration or something like that. A part of this, you know, as near sad, but part of me says there's an inevitability about this, in that, you know, these systems and technology as a whole is often, you know, built and designed for a specific period, and the fact things change is, you know, just part and parcel of it. And so in that sense, I think it's not unfair to say that Symbian is dead, but that's because, you know, the era that it was designed for is basically slowly disappearing, and the number of people that it if you like, it suits is decreasing at the same time. But there is this, you know, this idea that suddenly you flick a switch and it all changes. Of course, it doesn't happen like that. It's a very gradual process. And so, if you like, this idea of the decline of Symbian, the fading of Symbian, which I think, if we're fair, has been going on for a little while now and will now sort of continue on. And much more apparently, I guess, you know, when there's going to be no new device and less in the way of updates, is, you know, in one sense, there's this sense of inevitability about it. And actually, I think we'll probably see the same happen to, you know, the platforms that are currently at the top of the heap. You know, they'll change and, you know, no longer be recognisable for what they are now.
Yeah. But for me, though, a lot of it does come down to the hardware of the devices, which is possibly why we've been called all about Nokia in the past a number of times. And and I've written a couple of severe enthusiast articles about the Nokia 808 on the site over the last week or so. Do go and read those if you haven't, if you're listening to this podcast. Just an anecdote about battery life David mentioned there. I picked up my 808 this morning. I thought, that's funny, the battery's only half charged. And then I realized we're recording this on a Thursday. I charged it last, I think it was Monday night. So it had been going over 2 days and it had only gone down to half battery. Now, admittedly, I've been basically office bound most of the time, but I have been out and about and I've been using it for listening to podcasts at night and music here and there and checking email and social networking. And it had only gone down 50% in 48 hours. So I cannot imagine an Android device, or even a Windows phone device, actually coping with that sort of light use standby time. But when the E71 was launched, Ray, you were there at the launch. And I gave the anecdote to one of the Nokia guys that I'd been using the prototype E71 for the previous 2 weeks. People had been known to get 1 week of use, or fairly light use, but 1 week of use on from that device and that battery. And that's just astonishing. And you wouldn't get get that with any other smartphone platform. So Symbian lives. Rock on, Symbian, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Battery life is the one thing I really wish would improve, because I've been used to having it so much better. But I guess that does reflect the changing usage of devices. You know, if you want it to be able to do more, it has to have more power under the hood, which is where a lot of the battery life has gone, you know, because the capacity of the batteries has increased, but they're being asked to do more and more, not just in terms of the specific tasks, in terms of time spent being on and active, the sort of the complexity, which, as I say, requires more power. But battery life hasn't increased at the same pace as everything else. And if I had kind of, you know, one wish to grant of the smartphone world, far better battery life would certainly be it, because the pain of having to charge a battery up every day, even when you start using things like wireless charging, which I think is a great innovation, is still probably the thing that makes me use a Symbian device more than anything else. If I know I'm going to be away for a couple of days and not going to have easy access to a charger, you know, yes, you can work around it by taking a charge with you or having a car charge, but sometimes it's nice to go, just chuck that device in. I'm, you know, going to need it for phone call or looking up the odd thing, maybe catching up with a bit of email, but I don't really want to have to worry about it. And that's where the Symbian devices still come in. So it's actually why the E6 still sometimes has an outing with me.
Talking of the E6, just one final anecdote. There was a story we posted about 2 years ago, I guess just shortly after the E6 launched, with some of the Nokia guys actually took it round the world on one charge. They charged the phone up and literally flew it around the world, stopping at different cities, taking photographs, taking videos, then hopping on a plane, going to the next city. And they circumnavigated the globe, using it all the time, and all of that on one charge with no recharges, and it just made it home. So do go and look at that story. I think there's an accompanying video which you can enjoy some nostalgia and terrific battery life. Yeah, we're out of time, guys. Thank you very much to Dave Gilson.
Thank you, Steve. And it was talk to you all next time.
And yes, thanks, Rafe. I guess another fortnight and then we'll be back on air.
Absolutely, we will. And we'll try and have maybe less nostalgia and less talking about dead things and more talking about some other topics related to Symbian. But if you've got
anything,
anything you'd like us to talk about, please get in touch. We always love getting your feedback, and you can email me at rafe@allaboutsymbian.com or David and Steve at the respective addresses as well.
And the only final comment I've got is that nostalgia isn't what it used to be.